Welcome back to WBOI Presents. I'm Brittany Smith. Our second storyteller from the Trapdoor September Showcase is Janine Harold. She was introduced by Courtney Heiser. Enjoy!
A couple weeks ago, I don't know if you guys know this, but we workshop with all of the storytellers before they get up here on stage. And we were at a meeting, we were workshopping with Scott, who will be coming up later. And he said, hey, did you guys get a pitch from my friend Janine? Because she's got a great story. And we said no. And Scott right away gets on the phone and leaves Janine a voicemail. And he says, if you don't send this to them tonight, I will. And I personally don't find Scott to be a very intimidating guy. But apparently Janine does, because within an hour of the meeting, we got her pitch. So Janine met with us a couple weeks later, and we heard her story, and it was fantastic. So Janine is a financial advisor by day. Did you bring business cards with you tonight? Okay, well, if anybody needs Janine's advice, she's giving it free after, no, I'm just kidding. She's also been a 10-year member of the Toastmasters Club, so she knows what she's doing up here. And she's a Rotarian, active member of the community, and she has actually competed in speech competitions across the world. And she's got a really, really incredible story to share with you tonight. So please help me welcome Janine Harold to the stage.
Good evening. Can everybody hear me? All right, good. The volume is right. So when is the last time you heard a fairy tale where the main character cries real tears over the death of her stepmother? Such stories don't exist in fantasy land, do they? You'll only find them in real life. Now, I know a thing or two about stepmothers. I've had two of them, and I am one. But we're not going to talk about me tonight. Let's talk about them, my stepmothers. There are two memorable phone calls from my dad over the years about these two ladies, and I'm going to share them with you. But before we do that, let's go way back. Before all the stepmothering began. See, I was raised in the 60s in a close-knit, loving family. Kind of like, think Leave It to Beaver, but with daughters. And I was the beaver. Well, the 60s morphed into the 70s, and Leave It to Beaver kind of faded from our family dynamic. My parents grew apart and got divorced my senior year of high school. I was not surprised. Despite some of the problems and so forth, I loved my parents, and what I really wanted for them was their happiness. So the deal was, I stayed in the family home with my dad. My mom moved out, and then I was going to college. So this was home base while I went to college. So that summer, I worked a summer job, and then I went off to college, Southern Illinois University. Came home the next spring, worked a summer job, went back to college. Came back to home base, worked a summer job, went back to college. 3 weeks and 2 days after I got back to school, the first memorable phone call came ringing into my dorm room. Janine, just wanted you to know I'm getting married. Oh, wow, Dad, that's great. Wait a minute, Dad, who are you marrying? Now, what is wrong with this picture? I was just there 3 weeks and 2 days ago, and I have no idea who this man is marrying. And that's because 3 weeks and 2 days before, he had not met Susan. So, needless to say, I was skeptical. What was my dad thinking? Well, he brought her down to campus, and the first thing I noticed about Susan, she was younger than him, and she had a lot of makeup on, and it was just perfectly applied. Don't you just hate that? But she was nice enough. She wanted to get along. And I thought, you know, if she makes my dad happy, then I'm happy. So I went back home for the wedding. The leaves hadn't even started turning. But apparently, their love and affection for each other had started turning. You might say the honeymoon was over before the honeymoon was over. Well, I didn't know too much about what was going on because I was gone. But I do remember one conversation with Susan where she informed me that she would not take the garbage out without first putting her makeup on. Well, at least she would take the garbage out, right? They managed to stay married 3 years, probably 2.5 years longer than they should have. And to this day, my dad will tell you that one didn't count. And if you think I am exaggerating any of this, you can just ask him, because he's here tonight. He's sitting right there, Dad. Raise your hand, Dad. I was told that this had to be all true story, so he's here to keep me honest. All right, so now we will move forward a couple of decades to the second memorable phone call about my second stepmother, Gail. It was Monday, May 9th, 2005, 6:15 p.m. She's not gonna make it, Janine. The cancer's back. She has just a few weeks to live. My husband and I agreed that as soon as our daughter got out of school on Friday, we'd make the 3-hour trip down to Martinsville to spend the weekend with Dad and Gail. And after that, I would clear my calendar so that I could make as many trips as possible down there to help out and to be there with her at the very end. So as I waited for that weekend, I rearranged all my client appointments. I worked ahead on some projects and I took inventory of the overnight bags. And as I waited for that weekend, I thought a lot about Gail. Now, the first thing I noticed about Gail when my dad introduced me to his new girlfriend all those years ago, she was younger than him. Much younger. Approximately 15 years, 5 months, and 24 days younger than my dad, which made her not much older than me. Approximately 5 years, 7 months, and 26 days older than me. And let's not forget my older sister, Wally and Leave It to Beaver. So the age difference amongst us three young women was not very big. Now, not long after that introductory meeting, approximately 3 months, 4 days, and 2 hours later, my dad announced at a dinner gathering that he planned to marry Gail. I was skeptical. I mean, now she was nice enough, and she was easy to talk to and down to earth. Kind of cute, but not ditzy and glitzy, like the first one. But still, so young, so soon, what was my dad thinking? And yet, long before that phone call about her cancer, she pulled it off. Everybody loved Gail. The family, the extended family, neighbors, friends, everybody loved Gail. Even my mom. Well, they got along anyway. So as I waited for that weekend to come, I started to rehearse. How will I tell her how much I love her? What words to express my appreciation for how good she had been to my dad all these years? So I got nervous. What if I forget something? What if I don't say it quite right? So on Wednesday, as I waited for that weekend, I sat down and I actually wrote Gail a letter, and I can still remember some of it. It started out, "Dear Gail, as I think of you, I'm reminded of that Aesop's fable and the sun. The wind and the sun, they enter this competition. Then the wind goes first to see who can get a man to take off his coat. So the wind blows and he blows, and the man just wraps his coat more tightly. And so then it's the sun's turn. And the sun just shines with warmth and encouragement. And in no time, the man removes his coat. And Gail, that's how you entered our family. Two daughters, three granddaughters, many females competing for one man's attention. A recipe for disaster. But for 20 years, you made it beautiful. Thank you. Can we just go back to this discussion, this analogy of the sun for a minute? The sun is warm and inviting. Wasn't today a beautiful day? But the sun is also pretty powerful. Because even if we don't see it shining up above, it's there, and it knows everything, and it's very influential, isn't it? And Gail was kind of like that, too. See, she could draw people in. She could get people talking to her, and she really could read people. And so that meant you couldn't pull anything over on Gail. And that skill of hers worked well for her job because, you see, she was a case manager at the welfare department in Indianapolis. And then she was promoted to a supervisor. So you can just imagine between dealing with the politics and the bureaucracy of a government agency and then some of the crazy situations that you would find yourself in a welfare department, Gail could smell garbage a mile away. And she knew exactly how to deal with it, with or without her makeup on. Now, she also had that skill with the family. And so, for example, before my daughter knew anything about talking back, Gail looked at her one day and she looked at me and she said, "Janine, that girl's gonna give you a run for your money." And she was right. I can laugh about it now because it all turned out okay, but we had some very dicey situations. And thank goodness I could talk to Gail about it from time to time. And even my daughter would pull in Gail and share her woes about me. And Gail also had this way of offering a fresh perspective on what might seem to be a trivial problem. For example, when to take down the Christmas decorations. Now, in my mind, there's only one day in the year that you could take down Christmas decorations, and that is, of course, New Year's Day. Because you've got to get those decorations down to get the New Year started, right? But you can't take them down before New Year's Day because, I mean, that would be almost sacrilegious, disrespectful. Now, the problem with taking down the Christmas decorations on New Year's Day is it's a depressing job. Who wants to do that on New Year's Day? And with a hangover, no less. So I was explaining this to Gail one day, and she looked at me, and she said, "Jenny, it's like my mother always said, there's nothing more over than Christmas. Take down the decorations on the 26th or 27th. Jesus does not care about that kind of stuff. You can even pack up the manger scene." I have been enjoying New Year's Day immensely ever since. Depending, of course, on how much fun I've had the night before. So these were the kinds of things that Gail brought to the family. It's Thursday now, and I have to put that letter in the mail. I know it might not get to her by the weekend, but she'll have it next week, and my dad can read it to her and so forth. So I put that letter in the mail, and I finished packing. And on Friday morning, I settled in at work, and I made one more call to my dad. And he answered the phone before he said anything. Just the way he took his first breath, I knew Gail had just died. And in that moment, a powerful message was seared on my heart. Don't wait for the weekend. Now, I know some of you may be thinking, okay, well, that's a good little one-liner. It's short and memorable and kind of inspirational, but is it real? These messages we hear, do it now. Live every day as if it's your last. Can you really do that? Part of living a full life is anticipating and planning for events before they occur. But for the longest time, I beat myself up over missing Gail's final days because I was too busy planning for Gail's final days. As time went by, I started to think a little bit more about that. And recently it occurred to me, Gail didn't really need me there at the end. She died in the arms of the man she loved. And to this day, my dad will tell you how much he cherished those final hours alone with Gail. What Gail really needed was acceptance and love during her 20 years of marriage to my dad. And she made that so easy with her nature and how she talked to people and everything. And so in spite of what could have been a toxic situation, stepmother, stepdaughter, about the same age, we had a great relationship, Gail and me, and I still miss her. Something will happen and I'll think, now what would Gail say about that? And I can still hear her voice. And maybe it's her voice telling me, it's okay. Love the people in your life today. Make it special. Spend time with them. And if you do that, then no matter where you are, what you're doing, whether you're waiting for the weekend or living in the weekend, when it's time to say goodbye, you can do so without regret. Thank you.